My mother, Mitzvah Yom Kippur, got a call from Rebbetzin Kaplan that she's starting with Yaakov in America on Isru Chag of Sukkos in Rebbetzin Kaplan's dining room for eight girls. And she became the first teacher with Yaakov in America for eight girls. And my father was going every Sunday morning to Neri Yisrael in Baltimore. The problem was they were married a very short while, less than a year. Young couple to be all week long separated is not so gishmak. So my father was chavrusa with Reb Shlomo Hyman on weekends. Reb Shlomo was reshiva of Tevra Das, and they went to ask him, what do we do? Can't go on like this, like life. Should my mother move to Baltimore, which they expected him to say, or should my father come back to New York? They expected for sure you'd say, you know, the wife goes normally where the husband is. Reb Shlomo said, no, you, he said, my mother, Basha, you have to stay in New York, because your job of molding the next generation of the mothers of Klal Yisrael is more important than your job, Reb David, my father.
And welcome back to our next episode of Kolot. This is your host, Rabbi Hillel Kappenstein, director of the Columbus Community Kol. It's a great honor and privilege to bring to you our next episode, the Rosh Shiva of Darchei Torah, Rabbi Bender. Rabbi Bender, thank you so much for coming on the show.
My pleasure. Nice to be here.
So I know that you grew up in a home where Chinuch was a big focus, and I wanted to know if you could let our audience know a little bit about who you are and your upbringing.
I was raised by an American father and a European mother. My father was a Talmud of Tevra Das way back in the early years, and from there he went to the Mir in Europe. Mir Yeshiva was the preeminent yeshiva in Europe. Around 15 Bachram from America came, and he was one of those boys. He studied there for a lot of years and became quite, you know, chashev. He was a very, very special person. And then he met my mother. You know, my mother was a Polish citizen then. She really was from Russia originally. They had to move. They originally lived in the city of Minsk. From Minsk, they moved to a city called Otwock, which is on the outskirts, a suburb of Warsaw, where she lived with her parents. And my mother was one of the very first students of, very first, a little bit later, of the famous Sarah Schneer, the Sarah Schneer who built Beis Yaakov movement. My mother, Sarah Schneer, people don't know, Sarah Schneer's school was called a seminary. And that's why today they still call the Beis Yaakov's America Seminar, because she built the school not stam for learning, but she built it so that people can go out there and build schools. And they picked the elitist, the best of, really the best and the brightest of the girls in Europe who wanted to still, you know, study and learn, and made them into teachers. My mother already started two schools in Europe before the war broke out. And so she was a student of Sarah Schneer, together with some close friends. Rebbetzin Kaplan, who was the founder of the Beis Yaakov movement in America, was a very close friend, Rebbetzin Lachfogel. There were Nassim Lachfogel, Mashgiach of Lakewood Yeshiva, his wife, Rebbetzin Pinkus, Rebbetzin Pinkus' mother. And so she was an educator, my mother. My father, when they both came to America, they got married in Europe first. They got married in November 1938, and my mother was blissful. She even told me that the summer, the August before the war broke out, she was on vacation with my father. Gedolei Yisrael were there. It was a very, very chush of a place to be, and just the happiest time of her life. Little did they know, less than a month later, the war would break out. So I'm skipping over that part, excuse me, of their life, but they escaped. My father had an American passport. In those days, that was considered very valuable. My mother didn't have a visa through Chasdei Hashem, which is too long a story to go into right now. They got out on the very last boat out of Poland. Gdansk was the port from where they left, and they escaped. The bombs were already falling. They got out September 1, 1939, the day the war, when the Germans attacked Poland. And in fact, that same boat, after it got to Sweden and turned around, was bombed and was sunk by the Nazis. And they got out, and they arrived in America on Erev Yom Kippur. Erev Yom Kippur, 1940, which means, you know, with a tough race, Tzaddik Tess. And they arrived here, and my grandfather was American, I mean, he was from Europe originally, from Slonim, had a police car waiting for them, and rushed out to Williamsburg. She got into Williamsburg 10 minutes before the skiers. Where was my father? He had to sign paperwork. And the pier was on West 79th Street, so the next morning he walked to Williamsburg to join my mother, and that was the first Yom Kippur. So that was with how they landed here. My father was offered a job immediately by Rav Ruderman, Zecher Tzaddik Livracha, the Rosh Yeshiva of Baltimore, to have the highest chair under him and to become Mashgiach of the Beis Medrash. He was the predecessor to Rav David Krungles, who later became Mashgiach. My mother, Mitzvah Yom Kippur, got a call from Rebbetzin Kaplan that she started with Yaakov in America on Isru Chag of Sukkos in Rebbetzin Kaplan's dining room for eight girls. She's going to be the teacher. My mother told me she was a little worried because She knew. She spoke well. She was a very learned lady. She spoke seven languages. I think she spoke Polish, Russian, French, Spanish, Hebrew, Yiddish, and Latin. Why she never? I never asked her why she didn't learn English. But she was very nervous. She didn't know English in America, but it didn't matter because the girls only knew Yiddish. They weren't from, many of them were not from such wonderful homes and so on, but they knew Yiddish. But she did go at night. The first year, she went at night to a special classes to study English. English is second, equal to ESL. And she became the first teacher B'Shachar in America for eight girls. And my father was going every Sunday morning to Neri Sorel in Baltimore to Mashgiach. The problem was they married a very short while, less than a year. Young couple to be all week long separated is not so gishmak. So my father was chavrusa with Reb Shlomo Hyman on weekends. Shlomo was Rashiv of Tervidas, and they went to ask him, what do we do? Can't go on like this, like life. Should my mother move to Baltimore, which they expected him to say, or should my father come back to New York? They expected for sure you'd say, you know, the wife goes normally where the husband is. Shlomo said, no, you, he said, my mother, Basha, you have to stay in New York, because your job of molding the next generation of the mothers of Klal Yisrael is more important than your job, Reb David, my father.
Wow, tremendous. So quite an experience over the last few decades. We heard the Rosh Yeshiva say earlier today that chinuch is one of the things that there's not necessarily a messiah or a tradition on.
Correct. Aaron Leib told us to me. Aaron Leib said to me, Aaron Leib Shteyman, who I used to go to as a mechanuch before, like Rav Shach pointed and says, I can't do it anymore. Aaron Leib's taken over, right? And before that, Rabbi Leib was a chacham chinuch. He said commonly, he said, the only one mitzvah in the Torah that has no Masorah. Masorah is more than tradition. It's like, you know, really a Kabbalah, how to run it. And that's chinuch. No Masorah, because chinuch changes with the times. And for example, he said, the way it was, chinuch was tough years ago, today, usher. The only way you got to do it is sweetly, work with kids, pleasantly, et cetera, et cetera. He held, you can't send the boy ever out of yeshiva. I once asked to myself, if you can't throw a kid at yeshiva, what if he's a mafria, if he hurts others? He said to me, if that's the case, throw out the whole yeshiva. Everybody's mafria each other. Take care of the boys. It's understood if a boy brings in, you know, garbage, chas v'shalom, today's day and age technology. You know, you can't keep a boy showing other people the wrong things. But he was very strong about that. He held work with the kids, work with the kids, work with the kids. That's what you got to do today's day and age. And that's what we try to do in our yeshiva, certainly.
Well, and I heard you also mention that whenever it happened, that your mother would say, I'm disappointed in you, and I'm sure that was only once or twice or whatever.
Nah, much more than that. My mother never gave us a patch. My mother, we were young, my father passed away. My mother never, ever gave us a patch, ever. She would say, Yankel, I'm disappointed in you, and that was, it would hurt us. And, you know, maybe she'd say 10 times a day to me, but Yankel, I'm disappointed in you. Said to all the kids, that's what she said. She never hit us. Never, she didn't raise her voice. She was a... In fact, I meet many of my mother's students, they call her mama. Not, you know, she's Rebbetzin Bender, but they call her mama because she was like a mother to them.
And is that still the case, that type of, I know chinuch on one hand changes with the time, but in terms of like the messaging, I'm disappointed in you when something happens versus hitting or threatening.
It should be. Hitting and threatening is the wrong thing. The way is show the parents you really care about them. In our yeshiva, we have a rule. The rule is call the parent the first week of the year. Find out what you can about the kid. Maybe you'll know how to deal with him better. And every Mora does it, every Rebbe does it, and listen to the parents. I really believe very strongly, you know, when I became a Manal, Shanim Kadmonios, I visited some of the top Manalim in New York and America, and they all told me the same thing. Parents, they're crazy. Parents are not crazy. Parents know exactly what they're talking about. Parents want one thing. They're advocating for their child. If you're nice to them and listen to them, half the problem is over. And you call a parent at the beginning of the year and say, I'm here to work with you. You already think you had a problem. Parents are caring about their own child. What's wrong with that? The problem is a classroom of 25, even 30 kids sometimes, you can't have everything you want. There's 25 sets of needs in a classroom. But parents, you know, are not doing the wrong thing. Parents are advocating for their child. They're not crazy. What they don't understand is you can't do everything in one room, under one roof with 25 kids in a class. But there's nothing wrong with listening to parents. If you listen to the parent and talk to them and be pleasant to them, return their calls. Today it's emails, not return their emails. Show you care, and we do care. Then you can do a lot of things then.
One of the very popular questions I've heard, and I was sitting in a Q&A, chinuch Q&A, and like it was incredible how many questions had to do with children being disrespectful or chutzpah. What are some of the quick things you would like parents to remember as it relates to dealing with children?
By the way, I think it's a major error that people say that chutzpah was much worse today than it was years ago. It's not true. I remember as a Talmud in Tarbidas, we were good kids. We had a wonderful class wherever we went. They were kids who were at chutzpah. I remember incidents and stories of things kids did. I'm not going to, you know, tell you now on this particular conversation. But kids are mechutzah from then also. People say because we're nicer to the kids today. This is the line. We're nicer. That's why they're mechutzah. I don't see it. I mean, kids were afraid of a patch in the olden days. I mean, kids were afraid of being insulted and being hurt. They're not so afraid of that. Okay, maybe that breeds a little bit more. But you know what? I think it's the opposite. There's more Torah today than ever before. Yeshivas are doing better than ever before. It's an achshur Torah. It's a Torah with people learning Torah. Incredible amounts. Kids in sixth, and now in Eibud, started in the Rabbi Katzer Stiebel, where he made learning available for the kids, sort of, with Nashi afterwards and so on, and it was so overcrowded that we have now Yeshiva, 7 satellites all over town, where one of our Rebbeim is there, and another guy, kids love to learn today Torah. I think it's only happening because they're enjoying Torah. They're happy learning. And I don't say the chutzpah. I think they love their Rebbeim. Their Rebbeim today, you know, unfortunately, many of the Rebbeim years ago were Holocaust survivors. They were nervous. They had issues, you know. So with today's Rebbeim, I trained as Rebbeim, and they care about the kids. I think they're wonderful. I can tell you, my over 40 years of chinuch, the Rebbeim today, well, it's a wonderful Rebbeim years ago, too, chas v'shalom. Rebbeim today are just wonderful. They give and they give, and they visit kids who are sick at home. They take care of them. They do above and beyond the call of duty. Kids won't become chutzpahim in that type of atmosphere. I don't think it's correct.
So it sounds like a lot of preventative work and atmosphere.
That's correct. Make learning geschmack. Make learning enjoyable.
The home?
Yeah, I mean, the homes are fine. I mean, you know, some people need more training. Some parents got to be called in to talk to them. There are some people, you know, some parents could be very obnoxious sometimes. They want their way dafka. I once had a vada chinuch in yeshiva. It's an interesting story. When I became, I was quite young. You know, I'm still very young. But when I became menal, so they had a vada chinuch for me, which was made up of a lot of rebbeim, rosh yeshivas, rabbanim locally. And then one year, one man stood up and he complained bitterly in the meeting. The sixth grade rebbe was learning too slow. And I said, I answered, I think he's doing this for a lot of years. He knows what he's doing. 2 years later, the same individual goes and complains bitterly the rebbe's going much too fast. Same rebbe. We only one class in those days. It hit me. The kid 2 years before was very bright. He could do a little more. The kid now, his own son, was much weaker. So I didn't want to embarrass him publicly. I use the name Chaim all the time. I said, Rabbi Chaim, that's my name, but I use, you know, Chaim. I said, Rabbi Chaim, 2 years ago, like a deer in the headlights. So, but what was he doing wrong? He was complaining. That was the end of Vada Chinuch. I said, Vada Chinuch was not really working for the good of all the kids. It was working, if you want to make a Vada Chinuch, I told the Balabatim of outside people, that's fine. Also not so fine. But inside the yeshiva, people, parents, talking about their own kids. So parents, he's advocating for his own child. 2 years ago, he complained that the kid, Rebbe, was going too slow. Listen to the parent. And sometimes you have to not get along. I mean, in a way, you have to show them their mistake. Mm-hmm. And sometimes you got to be a little tough also.
Right. And then, let's say all these things are done, and children, unfortunately, these things are not working, and there's misbehavior. My question is, what's like normal misbehavior, and where does the Rosh Yeshiva think that it kind of like crosses a line where there might be necessary intervention?
Lying, cheating, things like that have to be dealt with immediately. It also becomes a habit. That's a bad thing. Lying and cheating and stealing, that's a must take care of right away. Where it's just a kid is being a little obnoxious sometimes, or a kid is starting up with another kid, a little fighting. You know, boys, they kill each other. 5 minutes later, they're best friends again. Mm-hmm. Now, girls are not like that. Girls mm-hmm. will carry a grudge for a month. Mm-hmm. Boys, you know, they'll punch each other out, and a few minutes later, they're best friends. So, fighting, you know, but a real fight, you got to cut him out. It should be a rule. A kid fights and hurts somebody, off he goes home. Mm-hmm. I don't like suspension. I don't like to, but sometimes you have no choice. Also, what we like to do sometimes is give detention. That works. Kids don't like that. But sometimes you got to punish a kid because he's but these are regular things. They're regular everyday things. Sometimes technology is another thing altogether. I don't know if you want to touch that now.
Yeah.
Technology is a tsarish, a tsarish. It's a tremendous problem today. And that's really hurting a lot of kids from growing.
Yeah.
That's every issue. But in generally speaking, I think the kids today are wonderful. They really are. They're beautiful. Mm-hmm. And the relationship is different. When I saw my principal when I was a kid growing up, I ran across the street. You were afraid of the principal, right? Today, good Shabbos, Rabbi Bender. It's wonderful. Mm. It's like that in all yeshivas today. That's the way yeshivas should be.
Wow. So let's go a little further. So you have that situation where the child, Rahman al-Islan, maybe is having those you know, second-tier fights, the lying or the cheating. What's the first thing that should be done.
I like to try to find out, call the parents, what's going on with the kid. Is something going on in the home? Sometimes you have a situation where the parents are going through difficult times, maybe some kid is sick. I tell all the rabbis, find out what's going on before you decide. There was a man, there was a grandparent in yeshiva. His name was Weinstock, Struli Weinstock. He has grandchildren in yeshiva today. Struli Weinstock told me that my father was his manal, and he came as an 11-year-old Jewel child from Colombia, South America, and he was given a bed in the dormitory. They had young kids in the dormitory then because they came from out of the country, and it was soaking every morning. It was leaking in the water. He used to wake up in the morning and change his linen, change his clothing. He came late to yeshiva. And the Rebbe would get angry at him and throw him out of class. My father asked him, why are you coming so late? And my father told me the story. No, Struli Weinstock told me the story, the person himself, because I don't remember much of my father. And Struli Weinstock, he asked him, why are you coming? He says, this, what's going on every morning? So my father went straight to the Rebbe privately, and he said to him, did you ever ask him why he's coming late? We just throw him out of class every day, coming late. Mm-hmm. Ask him why. My father was very upset. He took him to another class after that. But you got to ask. Someone came and told him around late, Machlaikis, throwing a kid out of yeshiva. And the Manal insisted he got to throw him out of yeshiva. The Rebbe insisted. And around Leib asked the Rebbe, he was arguing, throw him out of yeshiva, he said to him, do you know his mother's name? And he says, no, why should I know his mother's name? He says, that means you didn't daven for him yet?
Wow.
So around Leib said to this person, yeah, do a different story. So I think that, find out what's the issue. I'm not saying every little issue in the classroom. Any kid could be a chutzpahnik once in a while, every kid could do something wrong, but you see something is ongoing, the child is troubled, something's bothering him, then you got to, I think, put your heart and soul to figuring out why he's hurting.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And then you can find out a lot of things and help the kid out.
We live in a time where, like, the manual that's used for diagnosis, the DSMV, whatever, seems to be allowing the labels and diagnoses are going up and up and up. There's always this conversation if they've always been around, just not, you know, clinically.
Yeah, I've heard more about ADHD, ADD more than ever before, for sure. I think there may be reasons for that, why they're doing it. But kids have not changed. They really haven't changed. Again, technology is a whole different ballgame that's changing people, changing homes, and changing things. But generally speaking, we always had kids who couldn't sit still. Aaron Leib once said about Sholem Ber Sarutzkin, famous Sholem Ber, was the biggest kollel in Eretz Yisrael, runs around the world and raises millions and millions of dollars. He said, imagine if we would have given this kid medicine and he was a kid. We wouldn't have Sholem Ber today. They'd lock him up. He wouldn't do anything with his life. So we're too quick sometimes. Today in the age, we're a little too quick in pushing and a little too quickly in labeling kids. I think you got to wait a while, a couple of years. Sometimes there are kids who are ADD and can't focus.
Right.
And they're learning and they can't learn. They won't learn how to read. That's a problem. You got to listen. Sometimes there's a time for meds.
Time and place, but
not to make it just a national problem. The whole world isn't crazy.
Okay, very good. Going on further in this, let's say, this child's life, comes the time for high school and yeshiva. We wish that as people got older, the parents and children would be on the same page, but it doesn't always work that way. What happens when you have a child that wants to go one place and the parents want them going somewhere else? What's the best way to deal with that?
Explain the question.
Let's say you have a child that wants to go to this yeshiva or this school.
Oh, for high school?
Let's say high school. Yeah, through eighth grade, it's, you know, more simple, somewhat. But then when it comes to Masifta, high school, and so on and so forth, when parents and children are not on the same page, what's the best way to deal with it?
It depends, again. Things always depend. Every question depends.
Right, right.
It really depends what the issue is. If the kid, let's say, wants to go to a higher level yeshiva, and his parents want to keep him local, let's say, there's all kinds of questions, you know, how that would happen. If the kid wants to go to a different direction in life, so the parents have a right to stand up and say, we want to still hope that you'll go the derech of Havlimu, derech of Chaim that we want you to have. But generally speaking, you have to try to work it out. It's very bid to be very tough on a kid and not let him do what he wants to do in life, because sometimes they won't forgive you.
Mm-hmm.
Breaking up shidduchim and things like that, that's all part of that also. Sometimes the hurt and the pain could be around for years and years to come. So I think that where parents don't agree, an outsider, some parents should not be afraid to go for a Das Torah and ask another person, the kid is only 15 or 16 years old, to talk it over, or talk it over with a grandparent, to talk it over with a family friend. That's healthy, where it's something that you hear both sides. Nothing wrong with that. I think you're showing be showing your child that you really care about him and you want to go through with him. And there's certain things that are obvious. We were kids, for example, right? It's not really a good analogy, but we were not allowed to go to any house that had television. Right? And we were upset. You know, all the kids have TVs and we don't have TVs. You know, that's when we came to Rocky originally, when it was, you know, very commonplace to have televisions. And my parents made a rule. They said they don't want us to go, and they did it. They let us go watch TV, interesting, once a week to watch a football game. I mean, we let our kids go. My father did it with us. So you gotta come to a good understanding. You know, you have to be parents. Doesn't mean you're giving in to your child. Some parents feel never give in to your child. I think it's wrong. I think you got to listen to the child. See, very often you'll find something completely different in the child. So with child and a father and mother don't agree always the time. My mother, last Shalom, I mentioned this before, that, you know, she was always trying to be on the same page with us. She'd work with us and talk it out with us. Mm-hmm. Here's a widow who lost her entire family, including her parents, to the Holocaust, and comes back here, and then she becomes a widow longer than she's married, and she's always tried to schmooze it out with us and talk with us and to understand us a little bit. And never get angry and listen. You know, listen to your children something. Just like a Rebbe should hear what's going on in a kid's life, a parent should also hear that. Now, maybe that wasn't necessary 30, 40, 50 years ago. But parents got to know. You know, we had such tremendous derchats from my mother. We were off my mother, even though she was very nice to us. You have to set a certain tone in the house that there are parents, of course. Mm-hmm. But the tone should be also that parents can't talk to their kids. Kids could talk to their parents. That's very important.
Mm-hmm. And then, you know, when I go over to girls, high school and then going to seminary, they're under tremendous pressure.
You're picking a topic that I'm not happy about. Homework in America, Bechlal, is terrible. Whoever invented homework is a sadistic human being. The girls have hours and hours and hours of homework. I don't understand it. So one man said to me, the reason why we do it is because if they'll be free at night, they'll go off to Derech. I said, you're chasing him off to Derech by giving him all that homework. Right. I got a call from Rosh Yeshiva, and like, well, they told me that his children go to sleep at 9:00 crying because they can't finish their homework. And you know, the boys don't care. They don't do the homework. They don't care. But the girls do care, and they feel very badly about it, and the schools are very tough about it. I don't understand it. I think at night should be time for kids to talk to their parents, and we give a limited amount of homework now, yeshiva, really. And the kids are learning very well. They're going to the best yeshivas later on. Musa's homework. We didn't have any homework as kids, by the way. We had only review the spelling, review the math. That's what we had today. I once walked into one of my balabatim to fundraise for our yeshiva's dinner, Amiel dinner. It's a great story. And his daughter is sitting on our table, at the end of the table, a 14-year-old girl, 15-year-old girl, with a pile of books, swarm. And I was curious. I said, what are you doing now? I said to the daughter, I know the family. She says, I'm writing a report on the Hakdama of the Barbanel to Treyasa. I said, what? Most boys wouldn't know that there's Hakdama, what's Treyasa, etc. Is that too much for kids? And then you have many of the kids who can't do it, who are shvach in learning, and they have to keep up with the Joneses, and there's a tremendous polarization today, and all over the world today, yeshivas and seminaries. It's a very sad day for a lot of girls when the reports come back that they didn't get into the seminary of their choice. Very sad day. It's traumatic for many of the boys, and they find that they can't get into the right yeshiva they want to get into. Yeah, this happened in Europe, too. I don't think so. You know, Mir Yeshiva in Europe, anybody got in? Mir Yeshiva was the yeshiva, Shtel Davek America. The guy of Leib Malin, the Gedele Bethel Ginsburg, and Rivianna Minska, the greatest there, Yochum Levavitz Mashgiach there. What a yeshiva! And if you wanted to learn Torah, you went to Rabbi Yudel, the Chatzadik Levracha, yeshiva then in the mirror, and you said, I want to learn. He said, you want to learn? Come on in. Most yeshivas in Europe like that with that. You went to Rabbi Aaron and Kletzk, it was the same thing. Today, there's a polarization. It hurts the kids who really want to learn and don't make it. It's not fair. I mean, it's one thing that bothers me very much. I'm saying all over many places are not like that, you know.
And then going to the next stage in life, when it comes to the time to go into Shidduchim, when is a boy and when is a girl ready for Shidduchim?
Never. No, I'm just kidding. The girls today, 19, 20 years old, are the ones they start dating. Understandable. The boys are learning more. They're learning this old question of Shidduchim, the gap. Should we close up the gap a little bit? There's talk now about it. I think one of the chashivs to high schools, she was in Lakewood, cut off the fourth year besmedrish to tighten a little bit. Other ages for that, but a boy is 22. You know, chassidim get married at 18. Do they have more divorces than us? I don't think so. I think they do just fine, right?
Right.
So is there an age? You know, is there an age? Is it age? You have to. The most important thing to get our kids for a ready marriage is our own marriages. I understand there's a time for divorce. There's a time for, you know, kids got to see healthy marriage. They shouldn't see fighting. They see getting along. They see the derech eretz that a husband has to his wife, and vice versa. If they see that, they'll be ready for marriage. It's critical. We're the most important. You know, Moshe finds the Chazak Lebrach used to say very good word. He says, He says, we have a job. To learn and to teach. He says, that's only for a person that's a Rebbe in Yeshiva. He teaches. What are the same Bein Olam ask you, little Meidel Lamed, who's the guy that's let's say a shoemaker or a carpenter? Yeah, he's teaching, says Ramesha. Every single parent teaches their kids or teaches people around them. It doesn't mean, it only mean Torah, it means teaching a way of life, hadracha, honesty, integrity, and mitzvahs. I'm here in Columbus today, I'm very impressed. You know, I'm standing today in Columbus, Ohio, the yeshiva, the chinuch, the learning, the menalim, the people, the rabbanim, it's really a wonderful town. But every person is a lamed, every person. When you have a home, a shtub, the Yiddish shtub, and you built it nicely, there's a Shabbos table, there's all things that come with our mitzvahs, you're a lamed. That kid sees that, he'll be a great father, he'll be a great mother, that's what I think. So that starts very early in your homes. It has to be done in your homes. I mean, I remember my parents' home. I remember it yesterday.
When should couples start learning about child raising? Before they have children? Before they get married?
I think so. I think, when they get married, child raising, I think Shalom Bayis should be done earlier. I think Bachman come back from Israel, they should be sitting with someone. We try to have, I have a Vadin Yeshiva that I give for on Shalom Bayis. You know, to the kolel once every other week. My wife left. She said, "You give a vada shalom bayis." Now I'm kidding, you know. But now we have a vada every other week to the kibbutz. The rechon to come back to talk about what it means marrying a woman and taking care and being nice to her, and we talk about it all the time. Bachem and Yingolite have to be taught what shalom bayis is all about. I mean, especially sometimes they come from homes that didn't see that much shalom bayis. But I think it's very, very critical to talk about the topic. I give shemusin to the mesifta and to the bris medrash every Thursday. Wherever I can throw online about shalom bayis and being nice to a spouse, to a shmooze to 15-year-old kids, I'll do that. Why not? Let them hear how important shalom bayis is. I think so. I think it's very, very important.
And then going to the next stage, the whole conversation of family planning. Is there ever a time, of course, a couple gets married to build a home, to raise a family. Is there a time where a couple's maybe just not ready yet, they need to, you know, figure themselves out, get their marriage off to the right ground?
I think that should be for their own Rav and for their own Kala teacher, maybe for their own Chassan Rebbe. It's too hard to make a blanket statement about that. Generally speaking, all the years was, I'll tell you, the guys had kids right away, a lot of them, right? And, you know, it worked out, ended up working out. I don't worry about that much. I know today it's a little bit stylish and it's in session,
right.
But if you have a child with that, I think go to your local Rav and someone you trust, I think. That's not for me to make an overall statement, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, now we need to get to the big one, save technology for last.
You got to be careful. Parents got to know, they got to know that second is the fascist. There's a reason why in Silicon Valley, they don't let the kids play these games.
Right.
What's it called? The big one, the true, I forgot the name. Night, what's it called?
Netflix
No, whatever. The game they all play, I forgot the name, okay. Anyways, it's a kind of nefashis. If, you know, if you have an unfiltered, heavy in their parents, you know, if they have unfiltered internet or smartphones in their houses, they're playing Russian roulette with the kids' future. What a kid could see today, we didn't dream about when we were kids. Really, we didn't dream about it. And allowing unfiltered internet is suicidal. I mean, there's not enough time now to go to many anecdotes about it. Kids have been ruined. Boys and girls have been ruined. It's sakanas nefashis. They could see every sick thing in the world, and then when they get married, they end up having a sick life, especially in private in Yanim, because they've watched the junk and the garbage. And you got to watch your kids. You got to watch them. I tell my kids, do not let your children go. We were like, when I was a young kid, I mentioned before, let our children go to a house that had a television because they can watch it. Yet we let them watch a football game here and there. Don't let your child go to a party where they're going to have open internet and watching movies and things like that. It's sakanas nefashis. Parents think it's a joke. I thought by now everybody would understand it by now. We've seen the stories, Rahman al-Islam. Divorces happen because the young man knew too much and saw too much, Rahman al-Islam. You think get married is the answer? It won't be the answer. The amount of time now, it's sakanas nefashis. Value your kid's life. I don't care if you're modern, if you're right wing, or you're left wing. stay away from it, because it's going to ruin. I think the argument when you make on it should not be made on a Jewish religious level. The argument you made, you want healthy children. Healthy children cannot watch unhealthy things. And it's a kind of nefashis. Mm-hmm. Blanket but, statement, yeah.
Okay, so now let's play it out a little bit. I mean, you have children. Their parents have smartphones. Should parents not be letting their kids use their smartphones?
If they're unfiltered, absolutely not. Absolutely not. And you know what? The father should filter his own smartphone. Why do you trust the father? I tell mothers, tell your fathers, that you put in a code for them. Why should you allow it? It breaks up marriages later on in life. You know, your smartphone. Mm-hmm. First, that's a big Lashon Hara vehicle, right? A major, major Lashon Hara vehicle. So that's in itself a terrible thing. But, you know, husbands are not vulnerable later on in life. Sure, they're vulnerable. Mm-hmm. They shouldn't have unfiltered smartphones. I mean, Rebbe Yehuda Pian Zechasayach Levracha was a Mashgiach in Kfar Chasidim, and a Bacha once came over to him and told him he wants to know if he can go to a Bris Samnei Brak in the middle of the summer. I'm sorry, Tel Aviv, middle of the summer. He said, Tel Aviv, middle of the summer, you know, people don't dress the equivalent. How could you go there? It's like a public beach. He said, Rebbe, don't worry. He's 17 years old. He said, Rebbe, don't worry. It's in the one of his farm. It won't affect me. He took out from his pocket a 5-pound note. Those days, the currency was pounds. He took it out, and he said, here, take this 5 pounds. He says, I want you to go see a doctor. He says, why? He says, I'm 85 years old. I'm blind on one eye. And when I go in Tel Aviv in the summer, it affects me. You're 17 years old, a red-blooded kid, right? You have two, he said, these were two fleshiga eyes. And you're walking, doesn't affect you? Check yourself out. As Rabbi Lapian said, this is then. When we wanted to see a bad picture as kids, you had to go into a candy store, whatever kids would do in those days. Today, it's on our fingertips. Watch your children, protect your children. And if you do these things, you're not going to have a lot of nachas. You're going to have a lot of problems. You got to be very careful.
And how should parents be talking to their children about technology, saying, don't do this, don't do that?
You know, we don't say that many don'ts in our life. I don't believe in banning too much. We shouldn't ban everything. I really don't. I didn't think 624 is an issue. Who am I? It's a wonderful thing. Kids now have kosher ways of getting their music instead of going on Spotify or on, what's it called, the other one, Apple Music. Yeah. There we go. So, but you have to be careful. You have to be careful. And there's nothing we're taking it. No don'ts. I try to say as little don'ts as possible. This is don't. It's going to hurt you, and it won't. Finished. Chazak. We knew as kids, my father said, you don't watch television. And television then was gold compared to today. Mm-hmm. Right? And we told this to our kids. Today, it's a different world. TV Bichlal, but all the cable shows today. Why a person would have a toilet bowl in his living room, you know, a TV, excuse me, with all kinds of cable channels beyond me. And kids can go watch over there, but the computer's even worse. Mm-hmm. Gotta be very, very careful. Nothing wrong with saying don't to certain things. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You can ruin your kids forever and ever and ever and ever.
And it's not just technology today. There seems to be growing conversations, even in the most insulated communities, about recreational marijuana. And what's the best way to talk about that?
I'm not in that league. I don't deal with it too much, Baruch Hashem. I don't deal with it. And I never had a, you know, Bli Ayin Hara, the yeshiva, you know, Baruch Hashem, I don't want to say, you know, I'm sure there's somewhere, something, but I would say stay away from it. I tell you one thing, there was someone in our shul right there, and they used to call him a pothead. People said about this, yeah, he was a married guy, he's divorced already now, it affected his mind and his brain. I think it's clearly a bad thing, and if I don't deal with it, like I said before, too much, I think it should be a no-no.
But sometimes when these questions come up, parents can have like these like knee-jerk reactions. Don't do it. It's dangerous. And
I said before, I don't believe in too many don'ts. I don't even bans. Certain things should be a red line.
And how do you have that conversation about red lines?
Marijuana is a bad thing. It's a drug. It's a bad thing. Simple. The red line, if you generally you're giving your kids a lot and you're loving them to pieces and you take them places, you go on trips, 4-day trips, and you're taking care of them, nothing wrong with drawing a red line once in a while. Mm-hmm. Nothing
and
wrong.
You had to do the work beforehand.
Yeah, for sure. You have to have a nice, happy, healthy home where kids know they can talk to their parents anytime at anything. You got to have that. That's what you got to have. If you have a home like that, you have nothing to worry about.
Mm-hmm. Wow. And we had the Rosh Yeshiva meet the Younger Light this morning, speak in the school. Can share.
Fabulous cuddle. Very impressive.
Can you share some early impressions?
Yeah, not early impressions. I was impressed. I was there for a while with them. They're very good guys. They're up on me, I find. The Rosh Kol Rav Maris is a gem. He's really a gem. Tachman, you know, I mean, these are gems. These are good people in the Younger Light. And they're very normal, you know that? Tell you we're normal, so everybody's got different. Your Younger Light here are normal guys. It's wonderful. Very healthy.
Well, this bringing the Rosh Yeshiva to Columbus was in the makings for, I don't know how long.
Good few because months. Of you. You drove me crazy. That's why. Yes, I'm here. That's all. Baruch Hashem. I'm happy I'm here.
Thank you so much for coming.
Should be gebenched. Continued success. Atzlochem bracha and everything you do.
Thank you so much.
Kol tov.
To listen to all Kolot episodes and see upcoming guests, visit kolotpodcast.com. We are also on all podcast players. Type in Kolot on iTunes, Spotify, Google, Stitcher, Podbean, and Amazon. Share with your friends and please make sure to give us a 5-star review. Kolot is a project of the Columbus Community Kollel, a full-time Jewish learning center in Bexley, staffed with high-caliber Torah scholars. Ever since 1995, boys, girls, men, and women from all backgrounds and affiliations have found many opportunities to connect with Torah and mitzvos at the Kollel. Whether it's a study partner, an engaging lesson, or a program, the Kollel is your one-stop shop for all your Jewish learning. If you want to know how you can benefit from the Kollel, visit thekollel.org. That is thekollel.org, and forever be inspired.